We've been anytime, we know each other, unless there's somebody new, but I think we know each other, we've been family for quite some time. CEO, as you present, we would like you to touch on grading, because grading seems not to be quite there yet. So, and it's quite an issue, and we would like to get it from you, where the process is and how is the process going. The other thing that we would like you to tell us is the way you upload and collate statistics from your statistics. There is some overspending. If we're looking at quarterly spending, can you also, in your presentation, let us know how you are going to manage the other quarters in order to be able to have all the work done? We are also interested in the INDABA, of its impact, of its importance. Is it growing? Is it static? Is it regressing? Because I think that will also help us to have an idea and understanding. And actually the process of INDABA, because it consumes your budget. Do you see the impact of the incentive program as you are given something, in particular for grading? In the in your presentation, you also read that some hotels have withdrawn from upgrading. I'm sure they were upgraded, and they decided to withdraw. Was it a chain, or is just sporadic institutions? Then, on that happy note, can you shoot? And maybe, I'm sure, because your presentation is not so long, it might be through within an hour, so as to allow, if it can be less than an hour, that's fine, to allow members to engage.
The apologies I have here is from Honorable Makubele Mashele and Honorable Force and Honorable Nkomoche. Those are the apologies we have received. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. Thank you again for the opportunity for us to come present our results, Q1 2017-18 fiscal year. Q1 covers the period from April to June. So at times we have to hold ourselves back from actually talking ahead of the actual reporting period from the perspective. With me today are my two colleagues, not my usual suspects. The usual suspects is the COO, Ste, and the CFO, Tom. They've been deployed on very critical missions. Ste, COO, has gone to Australia, and there's a very big campaign in Australia called the Come Home Brew campaign. And all it is that we've noticed over time that a lot of the South African expatriates in Australia don't speak positively about our country. And as a result, it negates a lot of our efforts that we do from a marketing perspective. So part of this whole campaign that the CEO is leading is around, you know, literally converting them to become what we call tourism ambassadors. The CFO has gone to two or three markets and has been accompanied by the CFO of tourism, the Auditor General, and the National Treasury. It is an opportunity that we saw that we wanted to bring our important stakeholders, the AG and National Treasury, to really understand our business in the different markets that we operate in. that some of the rules that are in place, as an example, need to be adjusted for different markets. You know, Nigeria is very different from Germany, as an example. And at times, you know, the rules are created in Pretoria but may not be applicable across the world. So that's important on that side. Today with me is Nombulelo, who's the GM for finance, and she's the backbone of that space, so very capable in that regard. And making his cameo presence here as well is Daryl. Daryl is obviously head of the Trading Council. And I think it may be quite appropriate that we probably go into a bit more detail on the trading side and stuff like that. The way we structure the presentation is that we've learned over time that we really want to be succinct, short, sharp. And what we've done is put into two. So a lot of the details can stay in the annexure, which is basically for context information. The front end part of it basically is really the reporting itself. You will also see that in the report, we made an undertaking to this committee that we will report our financial and performance numbers both in the calendar year and the financial year as a PFMA. So you'll see that we split the two from that perspective because we wanted to make sure, as you're concerned, to align the financial year as well as the performance basically on that side. So with that as well is we all know about the We Do Tourism campaign that we started some time back in terms of really engendering South Africans to become tourism ambassadors. And I must say that campaign has been really successful in terms of just bringing about general awareness of tourism. Tourism is generally misunderstood, I think, within the environment of South Africa. More importantly as well, we are also very pleased. You know, we got a couple of mentions from the budget speech, the mini-media budget speech from the finance minister. And then I must congratulate the team is that we have really been keeping Treasury up to date as to what we're doing, as to the type of challenges we have, but also importantly the opportunities. And more, Chair and Honourable Members, we are starting to feel the pressure from a fiscal perspective of the expectations on tourism. You know, when the finance minister says that tourism is the new gold, you start to see other sectors as well saying, let's make sure that we really support and drive the sector. So we are both pleased and excited and a bit nervous as well at the same time, which is quite good from that perspective. So as part of the We Do Tourism campaign, this committee is obviously a very important stakeholder to us. We've created these little pins that I'm going to ask Daryl just to kind of hand out to everyone as a memento, and you know, we use it obviously as a lapels on our blazers and stuff like that. So anyway, I'll start while he hands some of those out. Go to the next slide. I think the first one just really talks about the situation analysis, and I'm on slide two of the presentation. Some slides I will spend some time on, some I'll just move depending on the assessment of some of the issues basically that are there. This one just kind of gives some contextual backdrop of that period of time that we are reporting on in terms of where we were as an economy. The unemployment issues are still basically quite prevalent from that perspective. And I think as the finance minister highlighted is that, you know, that the fiscal environment is quite constrained. Key to note, and this is going to be a theme in some of the areas that we touch on, is that because we have such a high inequality in South Africa, you find that there are areas of there is immense growth and there are areas of immense negative growth. But when you look at the global figure, you see a net, probably flat figure. And what that does, basically, it also has an impact on some of the figures that I'll talk to you today, especially on the domestic side, just to give you some of those inferences and insights that we are picking up from that perspective. So let me then go to slide four, which is basically an overview of the leisure tourism marketing side. And I think key, you know, elements in that space is that we've really, really been looking at collaboration and partnerships. We have been looking, you know, horizontally across government to make sure that we start to bring in other sectors, other ministries as well, departments, that can also become part and parcel of the We Do Tourism and support from their perspective. We have done a considerable amount of work and effort in bringing the provincial tourism authorities on board. We have heard the plea around how SA Tourism may not be visible on the ground within South Africa, and we do this through the provincial tourism authorities. And within them, as an example, we get into performance agreements across the entire scope of the business as well. We've also realized that, you know, it makes sense for us to collaborate our efforts and budgets to make sure that we start to magnify our impact as well. It also leads to great collaboration and partnerships so that, you know, we are aligned at times that you don't, pitch up at WTM London and see SA Tourism exhibition here, and then down the road you see another provincial tourism exhibition. We are a bit more collaborated and aligned from that perspective. We are also looking right across as well to some of the state-owned instruments, Sandparks, South African Airways, Freedom Parks, and all of those type of entities, the Blue Trains and everything else, to make sure that we have a lot more tighter relationship and we market them as part of our efforts from that perspective. Again, because we are essentially from the same family. We've done quite a lot to clean up our brand, and our brand becomes important. I mean, it is ultimately brand equity that ensures South Africa is top of mind in terms of being considered when someone thinks about coming through across on that side. But also as well, with NDT, we spend a lot of time to identify barriers where they may exist, some of the challenges that are there, to make sure that those are addressed adequately over time. And these go all the way from whether it's visa issues that we may be having or any other obstacles, you know, through DECO and some of the embassies that are there as well. Important as well is that, as we speak, as an example, the head of the Conventions Bureau is in Mpumalanga. And part of her mission and the team is to build capacity of the Mpumalanga region around conventions and conferences so that we can start to see more activity happening in those spaces. That was a request and a plea from this committee as well to make sure that the spread of conferences and conventions is not just in Joburg, Cape Town and Durban, but to look at the other smaller provinces as well. So we have to build up capacity and capability from that side and to make sure the quality of the bids as well submitted is also of a higher one to address things like geographic spread and stuff like that. On slide 6, touches a bit more on the Grading Council, and I'm very happy that the head of the Grading Council is with me today. But we'll speak a bit more around the Grading Council itself, the value proposition around it, both from the consumer side and the business side as well. Key I'd like to highlight over here is that we've realized that we need to go on quite a concerted drive to inform and educate the consumer about the benefits of grading, the benefits of actually of supporting graded establishments. We probably have been lacking a little bit in that regard in terms of making sure we inform and educate. And you'll start to hear this theme starting to come through consistently across the board. Wherever we identify certain things, we want to make sure that we drive campaigns that educate and inform the South African consumer and also internationally so they can make informed decisions as they come through that side. As I said, we will speak a bit more in detail around the grading side. Let me now just dive straight into the APPs themselves, which is slide 8. And you'll see a mix of these APPs. Some are measured on a quarterly basis, and we track them to make sure that we can give this committee comfort that we are indeed on the right track, and if not, to raise the alarms and we can intervene where needed. Some of these APPs, however, are only done annually. But we also took heed from the comments of this committee that said, even if it's done once a year annually, give us at least an indication as to how you're progressing towards it so that we don't get a shock at the end of the day. So we have understood that, and we have put in some commentary, and I'm happy to talk through it on that side. The first one is Program 1, the Corporate Support Staff Satisfaction Score. Important. I always say we don't make or manufacture anything or widgets. People are literally our most valuable assets that we have. So therefore, our engagement levels becomes important from that perspective. Again, just some context again here. This came from the ministerial review, which really did not paint a rosy picture in terms of how South African tourism's our colleagues and staff felt. So it is in our APPs. And what we did here is we took a benchmark of 3.8, which is a score that is in there. We have just done and have got the results, basically, of the latest staff survey score, which will be covered in the next reporting period. And I'll give you a bit of a sense on a couple of things. A, what I call the mood or the temperature is, let's say, tourism of our staff. B, and drill into a bit more some of the detail. What are some of the things that we are seeing that we can be improving on? Because what is happening right now as we speak is that the HR department is doing what you call these groups, focus groups. They're doing focus groups where they start to drill in terms of where the staff is feeling, what are some of the issues over there. Obviously, in this time, against the backdrop of where South Africa is as an economy, and some of those things start to come through on that side. We also, have also picked up that, you know, issues at home, issues from a personal space, also do impact on performance and general mood of people. And, we've got support structures such as what we call iCares that helps people, you know, beyond just their work environment. If there are any other issues that are prevalent within the organization. So, you know, as I said in the next quarter, I'm very happy to go a bit more detail on the people side. The next target is staff turnover is maintained 7%. We were well below 7%, and I think I remember chuckling the last time an honorable member Krumbuk reminded me in terms of, well, it's low because there are no jobs out there, so people are staying where they are put, you know, so we are well within that space. The vacancy rate as well of 7% as well, that's also ongoing, and remember, we are now in the real throngs of our recruitment process at SA Tourism. Just to give you a quick sense, our total staff complement approved is 202 people globally. We have been sitting on about 160 for the last period, and we deliberately said, let's get the operating model right and let's start the recruitment. So we are in the process right now. I think we get something like 5 new employees, or I think at the end of this month they're going to be joining the organization, building capacity. Key to note here is that there is no incremental cost organizational-wise. What we've just done is that we have taken some of the operational costs when we've used contractors, we've used service providers, and really insourced a lot of this because we believe there's a lot of our IP from that perspective. Next one is on work skills plan. Important that we make sure that we also have things like succession planning, and employees are equipped to do the jobs that they need to do. Important to note, this is a fast-changing environment, and if we can't keep up with our skills, we'd be left behind in the world. What keeps me awake at night is around our innovation and technology. I don't think it should be where it is, and we really want to start to move quite aggressively to make sure that we are up to breath with the latest and the greatest around the technology side of the business. Linked to employees as well, the percentage of people with disability, our target is 1%. Again, we had an executive meeting and we discussed this. We said, well, if we don't do anything deliberate, we will not be attracting, you know, people with disabilities. So we need to do something different and significant in that regard. And so we are looking at the specialized recruitment firms that actually specialize in people with disabilities and make sure that we create space for them within SA Tourism for them to come through. The next target talks about the migration from the old to the new structure. I've alluded to this one a little bit, which really talks about our new operating model and how we've really migrated people over. The view is that by this end of this financial year, this must have been sorted, closed, bedded down. I'm happy to report that we are ahead of our targets ourselves, and essentially I'm really hopeful that by the end of this calendar year, next 2 months, we'll be able to close a significant number of those positions and roles. So we are sitting at 90% already within Q1, and we are just going through the process now to make sure we've got some suitability from that perspective. Some country managers that we are placing in different markets, India, Netherlands, Australia, and even China, as an example. So our candidates have been approved by the board, and they're now sitting with the minister for concurrence to the people that are putting over there. Now, on slide 10, annual unqualified audit. We are very proud to consistently deliver unqualified audit reports. However, I want to stress to the team that this alone is not a measure. You know, it must be unqualified, but also we need to make sure that we do the work as well, that the impact and the results come through. Because you can have an unqualified audit and have done nothing, that's not success as well. So we're always trying to make sure that we, you know, we drive the business and drive very hard. And that's why we're investing in time and effort to make sure that the Auditor General and Treasury gets to know the nuances of the different markets over there, that we understand the spirit of PFMA, but in certain markets we need to be flexible, you know, in terms of how we execute it from their perspective. BBBE compliant suppliers, this is one space that we are really, really giving a lot of effort. And Daryl here on my left is our champion internally in the organization to make sure that from a BBBE perspective, we start to have black small businesses being part of our ecosystem at SA Tourism. We are literally ring-fencing in terms of allocating within our organization to make sure that we identify businesses. Those that we give big contracts to, we encourage them to pair up with smaller players, women designated groups, disabled youth, etc., from that perspective. And we want to go beyond just reporting on a number. We want to give a bit more granular so that we can have faces, we can have organizations that we can say tangibly, these organizations may be introduced to our organization and are part and parcel of the work that we do. We're also working with the department, the Department of Tourism, on the Enterprise Development Program, where they develop emerging businesses, which we give a market from a tourism perspective side. Slide 11, stakeholder satisfaction score, that's very important. Again, coming from the ministerial review, SA Tourism is not accessible, SA Tourism is distant from the market itself. We've done some very key and deliberate interactions with the market to make sure that we bring them into our business. We may not agree on everything, but we certainly do engage and are able to state our case as to we can become more predictable, and SA Tourism becomes a space where industry and the market itself starts to interact from a perspective. So again, similarly here, we've just done a survey, stakeholder satisfaction survey. We've never done one before, so we needed to have a benchmark, and this one has come in at 3.9. Apologies, it's not 3.9%, it's just 3.9, the score itself. And maybe on the next session, I'm happy to give you some detail as to what are some of the essence behind it. And we are now going to be using this score as a benchmark to make sure that we are able to measure ourselves how well or how not effective we are doing. Webinars is a platform that allows myself and the executive team on a monthly basis where we spend time with the market. We speak about topical issues that are suggested by the industry themselves. To give you a sense, I mean, of some of the issues we talk about, wide ranging, everything from the Creating Council, where we had one session, spoke about that one. As soon as yesterday, we had one on safety and security, because that's something that is topical around from a tourism perspective as well. The important part about these webinars is that we not only are communicating with trade in the country, but also trade globally around the world. Trade that actually sells South Africa. They want to know about certain things, and the more informed they are, the better they're able to sell South Africa from their perspective. The tourism growth strategy, I'm very happy to announce on that one, that's been put in place and submitted to board, basically, from their approval. I think this was one of the benchmarks, or not the benchmarks, but rather some of the things that we wanted to make sure are reported in this period as well. Slide 12 talks about some of the key reports which are enablers to our business. And these may seem to be, why are we putting reports in here? Well, the reports, if these reports are not done on time and compliance-wise, it literally becomes our license to operate, from the strategic plan to the APP to the annual financial statements and obviously these quarterly performance reports. We've been very diligent around these to make sure as well that we start to submit them and get them up to speed. Slide 13 talks about also as well the reports, but the market intelligence reports. Part of a process of SA Tourism is start to interact with the global environment so that we can start to announce and provide information on A, how we are doing as a country around tourism itself, but also B as well to share any particular insight that we may see happening over time to give indication to the market. If we start to see a high level of growth, as an example, in the Chinese market, we want to communicate this to industry so they can also be more focused as to how they look around from their perspective. So this covers the quarterly tourism industry reports and obviously the South African Tourism Index and the Global Brand Tracker reports, which we make visible and public available for everyone. Now, just to touch on slide 14, we start to look at the number side, both arrivals and also expenditure as well. This is in line with our 5 in 5, and what we've basically done is taken our 5 in 5, which is our stated goal for the next 5 years, and divided it into 5 years, but obviously not equally across, because we want to see incremental growth coming through, and also we look at this from a quarterly perspective. So let me start with the first one, which is Q1. Both you'll see on top, we've shown you the calendar year, January to March, but if you look at the second part of the page, you'll see the financial year, which is April to June. And this is just to give you a sense then, comparatively, if we segment it that way, what do we see from that perspective? And if I had to look at the calendar year, Q1, 2.7 million international arrivals was our target. We achieved 2.6 million, slightly 100,000 behind. However, our big contributor to international arrivals is SADC itself, what you call the Africa land market. And SADC behaves quite a lot in terms of our holiday season. And what we did, we saw this year the Easter break falling outside of Q1, which is traditionally within Q1. And we see now some of the Easter rush not coming through in Q1, but coming through in Q2. So we are very confident when we look at Q2, you see a spike coming up, and the net effect is that it balances out from that perspective. Again, whether you look at it from a financial year or even a calendar year, you're still looking about the same deviance of about 100,000 starting to come through for basically from that side. Key issues there, Zimbabwe is a bit under pressure. Lesotho was also under pressure as well in terms of the arrivals on that side. However, what we call the international arrivals outside of Africa, they've been growing nicely. They've been also been consistent in terms of how they're giving us some of the performance there. Slide 15 now mimics this, because slide 15 looks at the foreign direct spend, by these tourists. And obviously, these are related to the volume. The more volume you are, the more value you start to come through. So you see the consistency. Q1, 19.6 billion was the target. Achieved was 19 billion. You'll see in the financial year, however, it's a 2 billion rand shorter than in the financial year, because you're essentially looking at different periods from that regard, April to June versus January to March. It gives you a sense in terms of what we are facing in that regard. Key here, three things. One, Nigeria. Two, Angola. Forex shortages in those markets. Nigeria is a combination of a forex shortage and also backlog in visa processing. And I may sound like a broken record over here around Nigeria. We have a backlog, a weekly backlog, 5,000 visas that still have not been processed. And that's just sitting basically over there. Our competitors, the likes of Dubai, as an example, offers visas and arrivals for Nigerians. So we are becoming harder and more difficult to sell and more unpredictable to sell, because, submitting a visa does not guarantee you're going to get the visa itself. And whilst we insist that when you submit your visa, you need to have to show us proof that you've bought an airline ticket. So you could buy a ticket, submit the visa, get it declined, and you now have to cancel your ticket. And that in itself doesn't lend itself from that perspective. As I said earlier on, we communicate a lot of our pains through to NDT on the international DDG, who then obviously picks it up with Home Affairs and everything else. We understand the need to balance safety and security and keeping out unwanted visitors, but we always, from our side, you know, there'll be a push-pull relationship from their perspective. Kenya as well, we are very nervous about the ongoing uncertainty around elections, and we've seen that come through basically in our numbers, right? 82% decline in revenue basically just from that market. They're not moving, they're not traveling because obviously of issues within their organization as well. So when something like that happens, we have to look elsewhere in other markets and say, where do we dial up to make sure that we start to see that come through on the other side. Slide 16 talks about geographic spread of international tourists. It's important that tourists don't only just go to one or few spaces. We have a saying at times that we never let a good crisis go to waste. To give you a bit of a sense, you know, if we're not applying ourselves on the geographic spread, the water crisis in the Western Cape is really now starting to become an issue where we're saying, how do we make sure that we start to spread our visitors to go to other areas of the country as well, so that we can be kind, or kinder, basically, on the water resources where there's shortage of water, as an example, like we have in the Western Cape. So we're starting to put together some sort of measurements and things in place to saying, how do we start to get tourists to move, you know, so come to Cape Town, but instead of spending a full 10 days, spend 3 days, and then move further north into the country, or basically east into other areas as well. So we are devising measures in place to get that up and running. Obviously, using sustainability, which is the theme of the UNWTO this year as well, as a key driver where we inform and educate our tourists on this as well. We have developed a methodology that we are going to be assessing the geographic spread. And in the next quarter, which is covered in there, I'll be presenting in terms of what it is and how it will be measured, because we have to set a benchmark, a benchline first, a baseline, before we're moving on that one. Similarly to seasonality, it's important that jobs in tourism are not just for 6 months of the year or 9 months of the year, but are consistently throughout the year as well. And in this one, it's developing methodology to make sure that we can have a consistent and transparent way of measuring our seasonality. I think, Chair, you also mentioned in terms of data gathering, what's the methodology behind it and everything else. You know, we live in a world of big data at the moment where, you know, we need to understand insights down to a granular level so that we can make decisions. Because these things like seasonality and everything else, we've got to load them onto our surveys to make sure that we don't, you know, question the same tourists four times for different parts of the things that we need, that we actually do it once and it's included in there. We are really wanting to migrate to technology, where we start to use technology a lot more in terms of getting our data right. Two things are important. We want to increase the sample sizes. We want to make sure also as well that the information you get is a bit more granular, but I'll speak to a bit more around that one. Slide 18 now looks at domestic tourism. The number of domestic trips for domestic tourism. And remember, we have two measures here. Yeah? We have the total domestic trips, which includes the three areas of VFR, holiday trips, and also business trips. And then we also have a different section, which is just basically domestic holiday trips. Let me start with the top one in terms of the total trips achieved. Our target for the year is 24.9 million, if I look at the calendar here. Q1, we have a target of 6.1 million. We achieved 4.4, which is quite a formidable decrease, you know, relative to where our target is. Similarly, if I can just take you to the financial year as well, 5.6. And if you look at the financial year, the actual achieved is 4.8. Yes. The financial year looks relatively better because it incorporates the Easter period, but it's still less. Whilst if you look at the calendar year, January to March, And as I said, Easter fell in April this year, so therefore you don't see that kicker starting to come through on that side. Key here to note, when we start to drill into this number, so why are we below? VFR is down. And VFR comprises something like 70% of domestic trips. That one is down. And, you know, we are literally seeing less people traveling, even for, you know, trips where they are not utilizing, you know, paid accommodation. I'd like to talk about the next session and I'll come back to it, but I just want us to look at the two in contrast. Whilst if you look at the total number of domestic trips down versus to the targets, the picture is the opposite when you look at the holiday trips. And as I said, yeah, holiday trips are typically 10% of the total domestic trips. This is where if you ask someone, what's your primary reason for traveling, and is to say, thank you, is to say holiday trips here. So the target year for the year is 2.9 million. The target for Q1 is 712,000. Right? If you look at what has been achieved on the calendar side, it is it's quite significantly higher at 989. Right? In the financial year, you look at year-to-date, our target is 800,000, and if you look at what's been achieved there, it's 722. So, how do we explain the difference? How do we explain that whilst in the VFR we've seen a decrease, but in the holiday trips we've seen see quite an increase? And if you look at the next slide as well, you'll start to see the monetary values of them in terms of tourism spend aligned from that perspective. You know, when you start to drill at these things, you start to see two things. One is that, yes, there is a tight economic environment. Traveling is discretionary, and people rather prioritize other things before they travel. However, what we've seen is that those that are traveling have been traveling more. They've been doing a lot more trips, those have been traveling, one. Number two, we've also looked on the other side. The number of international trips taken by South Africans as well has also decreased relative to last year. So those that can afford, again, I made a bit of a context about our inequality in the country, right? A majority of the people, as I say, you know, are cutting down as per VFR. But those few, those 10%, those 15% of the people who are traveling are actually traveling more. And they are no longer going overseas at such a big rate as they used to, but are starting to travel the country. So you start to see holiday trips.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to make sure I heard correctly.
Yeah.
Surely you meant to say the majority of people... I apologize.
Surely you meant to say the majority of people are cutting down on the VFR, but not on holiday trips. Is that correct? Okay, then I heard you
carry.
All right, thanks.
Okay. So essentially, you know, those that were traveling before were always classified as holiday trips and not as VFR. VFR has gone down. The holiday trips, the repetition has gone higher. So those that were doing one trip a year are now doing four, three trips a year, as an example, much more. And they're no longer going as overseas on a higher rate as they used to. So hence, you start to see this figure starting to actually come up from that side. Okay, that's basically the rationale from that side. Okay. Now, slide 19 is merely a value representation of what I've just spoken about on the other side. Target for the year is 24.8 billion. For the quarter, 6.1 billion. We've achieved 5.4 billion. However, if you look at the domestic revenue side, again, 1.5, 2.2 on that side. We've debated as to how we should feel about this. Obviously, on one side, we are happy and thrilled that, you know, as the rand gets weaker, it is more expensive to travel overseas, especially for families. They're starting to look inward within the country, so that is something that we take positively to. However, at the same time, we are concerned then on the VFR coming through, because VFRs also form part of our conversion pipeline in terms of how do we convert people who traveled to visit friends and relatives to make sure now that we get them to become holiday trips on that side. We have done quite a lot of work in the background around domestic tourism. I'm happy to give you a heads up that on the 26th of November, we'll be launching our national campaign on domestic tourism. It will be opened up by the minister, but it's essentially targeting the festive season as a space, basically, to make sure that we drive domestic tourism quite hard from that side. Literally, whilst a lot of what we did previously was about building awareness, not only is this on building awareness, but there's conversion as well, so that when we do entice you to take a holiday, that you can either press a button or make a call, it will be executed. So the execution side of it becomes important. And we are showcasing the entire capabilities of South Africa, not just the obvious ones, you know, the beach, of the mountain, and the bush as well, but to show all the experiences that will start to come through, things like township tourism, heritage tourism. You'll start to see a lot of these come through on that side. We have invested a lot of time and effort and resources into this campaign, and we're really looking forward to the results around it. With the focus groups that we have assessed so far, the feedback is tremendous. But we are taking ourselves back to the days of when we had launched Short Left as an example, and the furor and the whole environment that it created. For lack of a better word, think of this one as Short Left 2.0, which is really a 2017, 18, 19 version of how we are going to move through quite aggressively within the sector. Similarly, like international tourists, domestic tourism also has geographic spread. It's important that South Africans explore this country as well. So the exact same methodology, the exact same reporting as well is consistent in domestic and international, including seasonality as well from that side. Again, it's about setting a baseline and make sure that we can start to drive them and measure them continuously. Now, let me move to the business event side, slide 21, which is the NCB side, Conventions Bureau. Annual target for number of business events hosted is 145. This is an annual target. This, remember, this business here is where it's one of those that typically agreements are locked in 4 or 5 years ahead. So a lot of the conventions you see now were already, you know, secured 4 years ago from that side. The biggest convention we've had so far is the World AIDS Conference, which was held in Durban, and that had 20,000 delegates. I'm happy to announce, and I know it's outside of this quota, but South Africa just secured one now where the target is 19,000 delegates, which is the Ophthalmology Society, and they'll be coming down to Cape Town in 2020. I know it sounds far, but the planning starts now from that side. And, you know, let me give you a sense in terms of some of the things that we want to do differently. There is delegate boosting. Delegate boosting basically means that although it's an ophthalmology conference, we know that we are a long-haul destination. We want to promote and boost for the people coming to bring their spouses with them. Right? We want to boost and promote that they bring their children with them as well. So that out of one delegate, you will literally get an extra 3 people coming to South Africa. And you can imagine what that does basically from that environment. We have set up pre- and post-tours to make sure, although the conference is in Cape Town, but the spread of it also happens in other areas as well. So that's something that we have deliberately driven on that side. To give you a bit of a sense, for the first quarter, we have achieved 26% of our annual target, which is kind of in line in terms of the 145 we are targeting, 38 that we have in number of events, 17 in the Western Cape, 9 in Gauteng, 9 in Gauteng, 4 in KZN, 2 in Mpumalanga, 1 Free State, 1 in the Eastern Cape. Limpopo, we have not been able to put anything as yet, but again, we are driving to make sure that we start to have a bit more significant events on that side. That also linked to the next one, which is international delegates hosted. Obviously, the more events you have, the likely the higher number of people that you have as well. And in this one, we are about 39% of the target for the annual year in just one quarter, so we are encouraged in that regard. Then obviously I talked about the bids that we need to submit and make sure that we are able to have future pipelines. 58 is for the year. We've done 26 within the first quarter. We typically have a 60% success rate in terms of the bids that we submit. Obviously, we are trying to ramp that up, and we are always having to say, well, how do we increase this to a higher percentage, from 60 to 80? Key to note over here is that we've always focused on ICA in terms of events. We have now taken a decision to look at ICA and non-ICA as well, because we do want to target those smaller ones that actually start to make a difference in the provinces on that side. We also have a very deliberate and focused Africa strategy. Conventions by their nature rotate, and we want to make sure that these conventions rotate within Africa so that when Mozambique, when Zimbabwe, when Rwanda start to have conference capabilities, it actually benefits us when they start to circulate from that side, because the entry point for the likes of Mozambique will always be our Tambo in terms of our strength in that regard. So we will play along those ones that says, how do we make sure that we get some action at least that is starting to happen around with our neighbors there. I also sit on a forum which is called RETOSA. And RETOSA is a tourism body, such as they say, tourism of 9 other SADC neighbors around. We meet on a quarterly basis for collaboration and alignment as well. And we also share best practice, as an example. Zambia has decided to adopt our grading council regime, and we are now helping them in order to train the assessors to make sure that they are of similar standard. Because similarly, we want tourists to seamlessly travel between these borders, and the quality and the expectation that they have is consistent, whether they're in South Africa or in Zambia, as an example. Mozambique, we're also helping them with the Convention Bureau as well, in terms of making sure that we are aligned from that perspective there. Okay, slide 22 just talks about our access platforms, the South African Tourism Managers. There are two that we manage. It's the Tourism Indaba and Meetings Africa. You asked the question, Chair, around Indaba. Where is it? What's its impact? What is its importance and everything else? It's common cause that Indaba has been, its star has been fading probably over the last 3, 4, 5 years. However, I'm very happy to note that the Indaba that we had this year has really started to bring the spring back into what Indaba is. We are starting to think of Indaba differently. We are starting to think of Indaba not just about South Africa, but Africa as well. And we've renamed it Africa's Travel Indaba. Secondly, what we've done is that it becomes an opportunity for the entire continent to showcase its capabilities, capacities to host events, to become a tourism destination basically globally as well. So that becomes important. We also are very deliberate in terms of the quality and type of buyers we bring through that we expose into South Africa as well. We are a lot closer to working with the industry around Indaba. So it is not something that SA Tourism does in a corner and just comes out and says, here's Indaba, and we shove it down their throats. But there's a process of engagement. What else can improve? And we're really creating a space that is co-owned as opposed to just, SA Tourism just doing it by itself. There are areas of improvement. One of the things we are looking very hard to do is we want Indaba to be on the UNWTO calendar. So you do that by having been endorsed as being part of a UNWTO event. Once that happens, it takes you to a different status, as an example. So that is one that is there. There's always debates around the timing of Indaba. Is May the right time? Should it not be September? When are the buying cycles, etc.? We've got to look at the global calendar and decide on a space that we own, significantly, and make sure we can drive basically from that side. Indaba is also a great, great platform for those new businesses that are coming in, that are looking for exposure, that are looking for platforms, that are looking for new buyers from around the world that can start to package them and sell them in various destinations. So that's working quite well from that regard. We are looking wider when you look at Indaba participation. It can't just be about the hotels and tour operators only. We want to bring in all the ancillary businesses that are actually part of the ecosystem of tourism. And I'm talking the likes of banks as an example. Banks play a big role, everything from Forex all the way up to credit card machines as an example for entities and stuff like that, including motor manufacturers, that provide the buses for the tour buses and everything else. Then you start to see a very different mix of Indaba and some of the participants that are coming through on that side. So it's something that we are building on, that we are building traction on, and it's going to get bigger and bigger and better. And more importantly, we want to make sure that Indaba changes and impacts businesses profitably as well. Meetings Africa is obviously the meeting side of it. Again, here, it's not just to say we're looking at convention centers, but look at the entire ecosystem, the value chain. So when you pull off a convention, who supplies the rigs? Who supplies the speakers? Who supplies the mics? Whose chairs and stuff? All of those things, basically, the logistics are a big element within it, and that becomes quite a key and important feature. Provincial signature events, this is part of the provincial tourism roadshow that we did. It is about making sure that SA Tourism does not become spectators to some of the events that are happening around this country. So when Gauteng Tourism Authority or an agency has Standard Bank Joy of Jazz, right? When the Comrade Marathon happens in KZN, we can't just be spectators of SA Tourism. We are partnering on such significant events to make sure, A, that we support them from a magnifying perspective, but B, we profile them around the world where in the relevant markets it makes sense to. So where else can we take the Comrade Marathon and make sure that it becomes part of the Grand Slam of marathons around the world? To give you a sense, in PE they have the triathlon, the Ironman as an example. That is growing bigger and bigger all the time. And I think the global Ironman one is happening next year as well. We are putting all our efforts to make sure, as an example, that in our Dutch markets, in our UK markets, that such things are actually quite profiled significantly from that perspective. Now, to move along to the next APP section, which is slide 23, and I'll talk quickly basically around the graded accommodation. And maybe let me hand over to Dale. Are you okay? Do you want me to hand over to you? Yeah. Just talk to it. Yeah. I think I can give you a bit of a sense in terms of, before I hand over to Dale, just to talk a bit more, drill a bit more detail there, is yes, the grading space is an area for concern for us. The world is not standing still. Technology is moving quite at a rapid pace as well. And, the areas of prevalence of grading what it was 5, 10 years ago will fundamentally look different in the next 5 years. So what does this mean for us? So how do we adapt to some of these changes that are sitting over there? Secondly as well, just to give a bit more color as to the cancellations that we're seeing on the non-renewals, what are some of the issues? What is happening from that perspective, and how do we make sure we bring more and more in that feature? Key here, as I said earlier on, is that consumer awareness, consumer education is something that we're going to be amplifying on quite loudly so that we can inform consumers that when you stay at a graded establishment, quality, consistency, also support as well becomes part and parcel of the package as opposed to not. So maybe let me give Daryl maybe about 5 minutes just to go through some of the issues and some of the areas highlighted by the chair, and then I'll pick up afterwards.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I think just to give some context, the association sort of membership fraternity have had a very difficult couple of years. And last year, the fiscal but also the calendar year, we were very fortunate. Whilst we didn't achieve our targets, we had a net increase in the number of graded establishments last year. We have not changed the criteria. We are in the process of doing so, but haven't formally changed them yet. We have not changed the team. We have not changed any systemic changes. But yet what we're seeing is this year we've had a decrease in the numbers. We've also established that our membership base is very sensitive to changes. And the one thing we did do this year, which we didn't do last year, is introduce the Tourism Incentive Program's Grading Support Fund. during the course of last year, we were often receiving feedback from our members that it was too expensive to grade. We obviously worked very closely with the National Department, and we included the applications for the Tourism Incentive Program, and in this particular case the grading support, into our application processes and into our renewal processes. And actually, whilst we've been relatively successful in applying the funding, we've done year-to-date, and I'm giving you figures at this point in time, not for the quarter, we've done in the region of 750 properties have already received assistance. It's also, we've spent, I think, in the region of 2.7 million rand, which is contributions to these properties to assist them. Whilst we've been able to do that, we've actually seen a negative impact in terms of our numbers. The cancellations you see on this report here, it mentions that there's 320 cancellations. But if you take the number of graded establishments that we opened the financial year with, which was 5,354, and the number that we closed with as at the end of the quarter, 5,252, it's only a difference of 102. So what this tells you is that there's a number of properties that are either coming back into the system, and there's a number of properties that are obviously new and applying to the system. So we have the situation where there's a lot of churn in our membership base. The grading support program is contributing enormously to that churn. So you're finding properties that aren't able to provide us with information that is required to apply the funding. They allow their property to cancel. They collect whatever information it is. So it might be an outstanding tax clearance certificate. It might be a BE certificate. It might be something like their public liability insurance needs to be renewed. And once they've collected that information, they reapply with us and they become graded again. So the net decrease for the quarter is only in the region of just under 2%. It looks a lot more concerning when you just look at the cancellations on its own. I just want to give the committee an idea of the reasons for cancellations. We're tracking that very, very closely. The first one, in the region of 25% of the cancellations are due to the businesses being closed. So when we ask the owners, why are you cancelling your grading, in many instances, almost a quarter of the instances, they're telling us that their property is no longer being used as a business. It is now being used as or converted back to a residential property or to a family home. There's also a number of changes in the shared economy area with our likes of Airbnb, where properties may very well be changing their business model. So they're no longer operating as a full-time bed and breakfast. Instead, they are renting out rooms in a family home or a residence a couple of nights a week. So that's one of the big contributors. Even with the Tourism Incentive Program and the criteria that come with applying the funding, we're still seeing about 30% of the cancellations are due to cost. So it's still a key driver. And the other big reason for cancellations in the region of 37% of the cancellations is due to late payment. So what happens is our memberships are valid for a year. Typically, about 6 months before the property is due to cancel, we send them a reminder. We encourage them to go and read the terms and conditions of grading should we have made any changes. We chat to them again about 4 months before they're due to renew. We give them at that point the opportunity to apply for the funding. At 90 days, we send them an invoice. At 60 days, we send them an invoice. At 30 days, we send them an invoice. So we communicate with them on many different instances. But what we still find is even with these different communications that go out to the properties, many of them still don't actually pay the invoices. And in terms of our rules and regulations, if you haven't paid, you obviously need to be cancelled. And what happens, and this, as you can see from the numbers, they realize after the fact that they've actually been cancelled because they receive a cancellation notice from us, and then they go through the process of reapplying. So I want to perhaps just speak quickly and... in the region of 37%. I'm just taking figures up with through the cancellation reports quite clearly or quite carefully. I want to also then talk to the hotels because, Madam Chair, one of your questions was about the hotels. Well, firstly, before I get to the hotels, the biggest portion of our cancellations are, unfortunately, the small to medium enterprises. So they are the bed and breakfasts, they are the guest houses, and they are the self-catering units. And also, they happen to be in the big major areas or the big major cities. So Gauteng and the Western Cape are our biggest cancellations. The hotels that you see here, 20 hotels, the majority of these hotels are independent small hotels, but I can give the committee comfort that those large hotel groups who have had hotels that have cancelled in this particular period have come back. For instance, There is a couple of properties belonging to the Piermont Group. They obviously had some administration challenges, realized that their membership had been cancelled, and I can confirm that three of those properties that were in that number are already back in the system. The same applies to any of the other big groups, Zohosan and so on. So our biggest concern is not with the hotel groups. Our biggest concern is with the small to medium enterprises, being the bed and breakfast guest houses and the self-catering facilities. Just, if I can, in closing, just give you some comfort in terms of what we're doing from a value offering perspective. The key things is our basket of benefits, which I think the committee is quite familiar with. We've revised it. We've made sure that it is a lot more focused. We did an analysis of what has been utilized by the different properties over the last 3 years, and we have now entered into an agreement as of the middle of October to revise and refine that offering so that it's more applicable to the categories that are utilizing it. TIP, one of the questions and one of the comments we received is how much are we actually, you know, promoting it. I must just give the committee comfort that at every event that we are invited to, we promote the Tourism Incentive Program grading support funding. We do so at various different interventions from a marketing perspective, both direct mailers. We do so on our website. Our assessors are also equipped with all the relevant information to promote it when they're engaging with properties. The committee will also be aware that we spent a lot of time reviewing our criteria. I can confirm that the criteria are with the ministry and with the national department, and we're obviously working with them to make sure it gets approved as speedily as possible. And then the last thing, which I think is very exciting for us at the Grading Council, is National Treasury have implemented, as of the 1st of October, a new national travel procurement framework. And we worked very closely with Treasury when they were putting this framework together. And what they have done is they've linked the star grading level to a rate to a particular rank in terms of the government official, which governs, you know, what can be spent on accommodation for any state employee. Because the Grading Council, according to the Tourism Act, is the only entity in South Africa that is permitted to give stars to an establishment in the tourism space as an indicator of quality. By virtue of that fact, every state-owned or state employee or state official has to actually use graded establishments going forward. So we're in a process of working with Treasury to ensure that the central supply database is updated with our graded establishment database on a regular basis, probably monthly going forward. And we'll also be working with Treasury to understand what properties have been listed in the central supply database that indicate that they provide accommodation but are not graded, because that for us is a huge lead. We obviously want to go and approach those properties to make sure they get graded and obviously continue to receive support from government in terms of accommodation spend. So there's a number of things happening in the background. We, as I said, the team hasn't changed, the criteria hasn't changed. I think the environment in which we operate is becoming more challenging for small businesses, but we encourage and continue to drive forward and push forward to make sure that we grow numbers as quickly as possible.
Thank you very much, Dara. I'll then move on, and I'm cognizant of the time, to the finance section, and I'll hand over to Norm Molelo just to take us through some of the issues there. I think just key to note, some of the questions that you indicated with Chair around the apparent over expenditure, but we'll start off on the revenue side, and it'll take you through some of the issues around our spending patterns and how it will pan out for the year. So over to you, Norm.
Thank you, Sisa. Slide 25 talks to our revenue. So it's all our revenue streams, and we presented it in the format that the committee has been asking us to present it in, aligning it to APPs to make it easy to track the spend. The first program, which is government grant, is the funds that we receive from NDT. You will see that it's 59% of our annual budget. And that's due to the fact that in order to limit our risk to a foreign currency fluctuations, we got our money up front so that we can lock it in hard currency when we transfer it to the country offices. So the bulk of the 672 million that you see there was transferred to the offices. In terms of Thomson levies, you'll see that it's the revenue recognizes more than our quarterly budgeted amount. And that's due to the additional funding which we received for collaborative funds. And then the third program relates to our exhibition income, so our main exhibitions, Indaba and Meetings Africa. You'll see that there's a variance there, and it's basically because a meeting with Africa only takes place in the last quarter, so in Feb. So the revenue that you're seeing there is only for Indaba, which happened in the first quarter, May 2017. And then in terms of grading fees, I think Darren has already touched on that, on the reason for the decrease that's correlated, it's linked to the reduction in the number of graded establishments. And sundry income, what we recognize there is all our miscellaneous income. So you'll see your interest income, you'll see your exhibition income, so all the other international, like IMEX, that we attend. So that's the fund, or that's the income that we recognize in that line item. Then moving over to budget and expenditure for the quarter. We've again presented it in the five different programs to align it to entities. Corporate support talks to our IT admin, so all your support departments at SA Tourism. You'll see that there's a variance, and the explanation for the variance is it's a non-cash item or non-cash overspend, and that's due to amortization and depreciation. So the initial cash outflow is when we buy the asset, but in terms of accounting, what is included in the actual expenditure is how we amortize or we depreciate the asset, which is a non-cash expenditure. And I think I want to address the query regarding how do you then fix the overspend? Will you have enough for the full financial year? So if it's non-cash, it does not mean that there was a cash outflow. So from that perspective, looking at the first quarter, we are not in trouble in terms of the rest of the financial year. Business enablement, mostly your research, with all our research activities. Most of the procurement in terms of research is also upfront. So you'll find that the project might run for more than or over three quarters, but the billing or the procurement thereof happens upfront. So you'll see that in the first quarter, there's an initial cash outflow, but then it's also amortized over the rest of the financial year. Business events, as the same thing, CISA touched on how we do subvention funding and bidding support. So you commit way in advance, and it might happen 2-3 years later. So you also see that whole upfront payment in terms of cash outflow. Visitor experience linked. Darren has touched on why we have not spent, and it's also linked to the target. I think I just want to reiterate that in terms of how we've tracked our spending and the fact that we're currently sitting at 32% of total expenditure, you see that it's also aligned to, or it's consistent with the past, because even in the past with our quarter one expenditure, it's always slightly higher than 25% if you were to think 25 over a full year. And that's because of the numerous upfront payments that we make in quarter one. Then in terms of, this slide is just slide 27. Slide 27 is to break down or its economic classification of our expenditure. We've classified, so we've isolated our compensation or employee cost, as well as goods and services, excluding CAPEX. So we're just showing the income statement side. In terms of employee cost, our spend is aligned to what was budgeted. I think employee cost is easier to budget for because it's fixed and you know beforehand how much you'd be paying, so it's easy to track. Goods and services talks to all our marketing expenditure, and you'll see that the next slide is a graphical representation of our marketing expenditure, including where we spend our money. We spend it in hosting, but it's broken down into hosting, which is your normal international hosting. We've got marketing capabilities, and that's all our retainers that we pay for agencies. We've got marketing research, as well as overheads, goods and other services. Overheads, goods and other services talks to your overhead expenditure. So it's all your lease payments for our country offices. It excludes employee costs because that's already taken into account as a separate line item, and it also includes the value for foreign currency exchange losses. Then under capital assets is all our capital assets, so that's the balance sheet side of our financial records. As you can see, the only plans spent during quarter one related to software and other intangibles, and it was for the performance contracts management system, as well as the procurement of other IT systems. Okay. I think I've already addressed this one. This is the breakdown of all the goods and services and actually where we spend our marketing expenditure. Okay. And that's it. And the slide, the same as the previous slide, so instead of a graphical representation, we actually give the actual values or the actual amounts we just spent per marketing category.
Thank you, Nomole. Thank you for that overview. I'm now going to go on the human capital one, just a couple of slides later to talk our the people side, to give you a bit of a sense in terms of the number of employees, the fixed-term contracts, which is basically the executive team, all of us on fixed-term contracts, including the country managers. We now call them hub heads because they look after more than just one country, but a block as well, internships and contract employees. So we still have, on a recruitment campaign that we want to really kind of block out by the end of this financial year. Slide 32 gives you a sense in terms of the spread employment equity side from an organizational perspective. Challenges still remain at executive level in terms of employment equity side, in terms of representation. South African tourism has a unique challenge of not having enough black males, strange enough, you know, throughout the organization. And, you know, in our recruitment process, we are deliberately trying to make sure that we start to balance some of these ones out. But I think we are under control, basically, from that perspective. The next slide, from slide 33 onwards, is really more of the journey that we've been on, that we took this committee early on last year, around the operating model. It gives you a sense in terms of how we've reviewed and how we're going through. And as I said, we are really pushing quite hard to make sure that we move out of project status to really becoming embedded and having these things to become business as usual. So I think the next three slides will basically give you a sense in terms of our project Ignite, where we started, and the film is slide 34, the next one basically, and gives you a sense in terms of some of the things that we've done and how we are tracking towards them. Human capital, what I've spoken about. And then lastly, looks on the governance side, slide 37, which is basically the board meetings. We do report to a board. The board meets quarterly outside the normal basis, but also with some one or two extra board meetings based on the particular issues that are there as well. There's also for the grading council what you call an awards committee, which is almost like an advisory panel as well that assists the grading council. And this includes various representatives across the board. SMEs are part of the example. The big operators are also in there. Similarly, the National Conventions Bureau also is a subcommittee, which is made up of some of the players within the spaces. And the next slide basically just gives you a sense in terms of the board itself. We've got a full board of 14 people. So it's quite a full, lively board, I'm sure you can imagine. And that gives you a sense in terms of how some of the attendance as well. Slide 39 gives you a sense in terms of the expenditure or the remuneration of the board itself. It's more nominal more than anything. And state employees are not allowed to receive payment is one. The chair of the board is no longer a state employee, so she will also come through in terms of some of the payments on that side. So, Chair and Honourable Members, that's Q1 for us. The rest of the document, as I say, is annex just to give more character and context to some of the issues over there. And thank you very much. I hope we've given you a bit of a sense in terms of where we are moving towards. Our areas of achievement, but how we are progressing on others as well. As I said earlier on, the pressure is definitely on from a performance sector side, and we remain quite excited to make sure that we really put our first foot forward and drive this quite hard. The world is not standing still, and just to reflect lastly as well, is it's amazing how incidents around the world are treated differently from one region to the other. So we had a look at the incidents in Vegas, as an example. you know, where that, you know, man started shooting basically from the window. And we've got to always ask ourselves, what if a similar event had to happen in South Africa? What would the impact and the, you know, the consequences of that? The strangest thing happened in Vegas. We had a team who was attending an IMAX the trade show the following week. They came back and told us they've never seen Vegas that full. It was more fuller than it was, basically. And this just goes to show you about how brand equity allows you to be able to recover from such major obstacles. And obviously, as South Africa and as Africa, we're just not at that level yet. You know, we'll probably be out for the whole year still recovering from such incidents. So we are always keeping our eye out as to what is happening around the world and to make sure that we cover such things. There are other issues that literally take us back and negate all of our efforts, especially our investments. You know, things like safety and security. The big issue that we've been dealing with is that crime incidents around the 36 Dutch tourists. You know, what a lost opportunity. 36 people were scheduled to be here for 22 days. 22 days, right? And you can imagine, within a day, following day, they had to go back. The thing I'd like to bring to this committee is that it makes bigger news in those foreign markets than in South Africa. It's amazing the type of calls we had to feel. At some point, I almost had to go to the Netherlands to try and tie this. It made fan-based news in that environment, and it just kept on spiraling over and over and over again, to the extent that now, even in our German market, they're starting to pick up those incidents of those Dutch tourists starting to come through. China, we're still under pressure, because China, the narrative there is that, you know, we are not too kind on Chinese tourists, so we target them from that perspective. So we've got all these things, we can do all we want to market, but it takes these things that just kind of really spiral us out to slip back up again. We will definitely see a drop in our Netherlands market, that I can assure you, but again, we have to look for other areas to plug this performance and make sure that we go forward. But that said, we are still encouraged, and the team is full on. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. I see the hands are up. Honorable Krumpok, Honorable Tsego.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to SAT for another presentation packed with stats and food for thought. Just to comment on the very last thing that was said, I think people around the world, particularly international tourists from North America and Europe, and I guess also from Australasia now, and growing numbers of Japanese and Chinese tourists, are used to the fact that every couple of years America has this kind of shooting incident. I mean, it's not the first time we've had it. We've had it at Columbine. We've had it at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And now we've had it from the Mandalay Hotel in Las Vegas. But it's because there's a general world perception that America's gun laws are the freest in the world, and you can buy, in this particular case, 20 semi-automatic rifles and unlimited ammunition, allegedly to protect yourself, when one would have been enough. It doesn't have to be a mass killing machine. And so people see it as the work of lunatics. That's quite different, I have to say, with respect to people actually targeting actual tourists. This individual that perpetrated this evil act was not going after tourists. He was trying to become famous, and he took out, I imagine, mostly American residents. If there had been a tourist bus that attended the event, and he opened fire on them first and then the crowd, I think it would have had a different effect. So I'm not sure that the comparison is entirely fair, but I do take the general point. So I'd like to comment on four things during the presentation. The first thing that struck me was before we even began, and if I heard it correctly, come home brew. Okay, I mean, it's nice and catchy, it's like shot left. But what, and I certainly applaud and support the sentiment around trying to help our brand positivity, in this particular case, I think you mentioned Australia, in trying to turn around the narrative which prevents Australians, many of whom who should be former South Africans, who should be encouraged to come back even if to see the remaining family members. I understand what you're trying to do there, but I wonder, and maybe this is where I'd like you to comment, just how much of a value for money exercise that is. Because at the moment, and it's been this way for some time, but it's been worse for reasons that I don't have to spell out in an inter-party committee, that the news coming out of our country is an avalanche of relentlessly bad news at the moment. I mean, we are talked about in international standards as being a failed state now. And that's the truth. And people who leave the country, it's part of human nature, once they leave, to justify even to themselves, never mind everybody else, why they've left. And it's part of our defense mechanisms, because it's hard to leave. Psychologically, it's a difficult thing to do. One of the ways an individual protects themselves is to convince themselves that they did the right thing by leaving. And part of that psychological process is to say, well, you see how bad it is, that's why I left. Then you feel better about what you left behind. And I'm not convinced that with the limited budget that SA Tourism has, and I still believe it's limited even though they have had increases over the years, that trying to convert people who have a emotional need to say what they say is necessarily all that effective. And perhaps you could give us some statistics. I know that the program is not taking place, but, I mean, what success do we have? Can we even measure the level of negativity being spread by former South Africans in this particular case in Australia and say that after our program it was a whole lot better and there's far less people lowering our brand positivity amongst potential international tourists from South Africa? So I'd just like to know, how effective is that program and can you measure it? If so, what is the outcome? Then on your MICE and conference choices, which is one of your focus areas for 17 and 18, I again think this is a good thing to try and encourage people to come out here, because one of the experiences that I can personally talk to is I became a brand ambassador during the 2010 FIFA World Cup, and I made it my mission to go to as many different World Cup centers as I could and talk to as many tourists, and I did quite an extensive survey interviewing people from all over the world. And I didn't find a single person that did not say that the country was everything they expected to be. Everyone was very positive about what they saw. Virtually everybody said that the bad stuff that had been said about South Africa, they had now seen for themselves, were not true, and they'd love to come back. I mean, it was an immensely positive experience for the 357,000 that Garn Thornton said visited here during the World Cup, which makes you think that if only you can get people to come, that's half the battle won, because once they see for themselves what a beautiful country this is and how many products we have at good value for money, then they're very likely to become good brand ambassadors, having come here and therefore speak from authority. But the one thing that does worry me is the people that go to some of our cities and towns that are completely off-putting and filthy to the extent that it's actually a health hazard. And I mentioned the city I live in, which is Pietermaritzburg, or to give its correct name, Umzinduzi. I was asked to facilitate a strategic planning session there 2 weeks ago in the center of town, and it took place in a building that was next to the provincial legislature, which 20 years ago was one of the most sought-after streets in the town. It's in the center of all those little alleyways and lanes which people used to walk up and down with their quaint stores, and where, if you might remember, there was a TV program centered called The Dingleys in the early days of SABC. I see Petra smiling. It's like me showing her age. Okay. Now, when I went through the main street, which is Langeliba Levy Street, formerly Long Market Street, to walk from the legislature to that venue, it's only about 50 or 60 meters. The rubbish was that I had to push my way through was between my ankle and my knees. That's how deep the rubbish was. And that's the center of town, 30 meters away from the statue of Queen Victoria, which is a major attraction, one street away from the statue of Mahatma Gandhi, because he was thrown off the train at Pietermaritzburg, as we all know, and it contains four or five of the greatest examples of Victorian architecture in the Southern Hemisphere. And it's dangerous because the rats are in that filth, and as you kick the rubbish apart to try and make your way, because you don't know what you might be standing on, you can get bitten by a rat and get tetanus. That's the capital city of KwaZulu-Natal. And I know from previous years that the CEO of Maritzburg Tourism got to a point where she was advising prospective tourists to Maritzburg not to come, because she felt the experience would be so bad that they'd never come again, and she wanted to give the city 2-3 years to recover and then make them come, because then they'd come again. And they were prepared as a chamber of commerce and tourism and industry. It was a tourism promotion, I can't remember exactly, but the tourism promotion arm of the Maritzburg City Council. They were prepared to take the short-term hit in order to try and secure the economic future of the city from tourism in the medium and long term. And they're advising people to go to adjoining towns, not to lose the money in the province, but to go to other places that were not quite right there. And my question, therefore, to you is, when we promote our country and our cities and secondary towns, as you put it in your presentation, for international conferences and events and those type of things, how selective are you to make sure that they're going to go and you will recommend places where the experience will be positive, and you're not going to have a whole lot of people saying, you know, I went to South Africa and the place I went to was the filthiest city I've been to in my life. Don't ever go there. Because that to me is a huge brand risk. So can you give us some idea of how you discern and how you actually recommend, if at all? Then my second last question is on the international arrivals. And I believe I did ask this in the last meeting. So it is slightly down against the budgeted amounts. But you made the point that the rand did appreciate, and therefore the revenue we would have received on exchange would have been less simply because of the currency fluctuation. It still worries me that the wealth effect of a Dow Jones being between 22,000 and 23,000 points, the FTSE is 7,300. I mean, European stock markets are doing well. In fact, all assets across the world are doing well, even our own JSE. The wealth effect of that should be driving more people, even with the rand appreciation, as you mentioned, becoming something of a dampening effect on the converted euros or dollars or pounds into our own currency. And my question therefore is, have you measured the actual amount of revenue in constant euros, dollars, or pounds? In other words, when you take the currency fluctuations out, what was the actual spend? And then my last question for you, Chairperson, is on the domestic trips. And I take the points about the holidays going up and the VFR going down, and sometimes it's not always easy to disaggregate those two. I imagine there must be quite severe definitional and statistical rigorous type of analysis you've got to do to try actually say it's one and not the other, because you can easily go to visit a relative and then pop into your local tourist resort, then what is the trip? But the decline from 6.1 to 4.4, which is a 40% decline, that's serious for anyone's language, no matter what some silver linings might be in the background. And I wanted to ask whether or to what extent is SAT promoting and even succeeding in looking at what you might call segmented markets or two-tier pricing systems, because it's a well-known fact of economic life that pensioners, for example, will be offered a discount because the supplier offering that discount and therefore offering a two-tier pricing system is actually going to make more money by giving away a huge discount than not getting the pensioners a custom at all. And if we are struggling so much on domestic tourism, how much impact does SAT have in looking at the kind of thing that my colleague, Honourable Foss, was talking about in terms of South Africans getting a lower price at some government resorts or state resorts? And indeed, is there any kind of analysis which talks about or sheds some light on what we might achieve in terms of overall income if we're able to do that price differentiation? Because it works in business, and a lot of businesses make more money by charging some people less and others more. And we should be maximizing the number of people visiting these resorts and maximizing the revenue stream so that there is funding to improve them and maintain them and all the other good things that come with a flourishing product that's generating cash flow. So thank you, Chair, for those four questions. I'd like to hear what the answers are.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, firstly, I must appreciate the fact the approach of a geographic spread, more so under the hosting of events. It means when we advise, they take our advices. I appreciate that. And also, looking at their presentation, I saw the fact that even if there is nothing that has happened in that particular quarter, but they have something to say that this was not applicable in that quarter. I've seen it under in this presentation under the first quarter, more so under the under Program 1. Chair, I was looking at the presentation where they were saying there's a decline under visiting friends and relatives. My question is, how do they measure? Because there's a lot of movement. How do you measure? Is your measurement source correct for you to come to that conclusion? Because you are saying there's a decline under that. Coming to the issue of quality assurance, you did give us the reasons for the decline, but I'm worried when you talk of big business pulling out. I understand with the small and medium businesses, but I don't get it with the big business, because they are not the ones that can be affected hugely with late payments and whatever. Is it not that they see no importance in the program, or are they not going to have are they not thinking of another system of, let me say, there's going to be another body that they are thinking of? I know that there's always competition in business, and that's my worry. I have also a question around which businesses are you targeting when you give support under grading? Which ones? How long does it take one to apply for or reapply? Because that may be the reason for small businesses to pull out. Coming to the issue of the campaign, I Do Tourism campaign. I know it was launched, but don't you think of a strategy to go province by province to launch the campaign, target various groups so that it gives benefit to domestic tourism? My other worry was under your workforce profile, where you only highlighted one internship. Is it for this quarter, or is it for the financial year? I also had a question around your recruitment policy. What is it saying around the issue of internships and contract workers now that you are under this stage of placing your personnel and whatever, this transition stage? Can you short-circuit your recruitment such that you target those that are under internship or under contracts? I think, Chair, there can be a penalty for those who still have the plague of grading, without necessarily renewing, or that's just my suggestion, so that we assure visitors that there's quality assurance in that establishment. Thank you, Chairperson. Excuse me for my lateness. It was just a transport problem. Thank you.
No, you did say an N1 was mumbo jumbo full. So, understood. SAT, thank you very much for your presentation. I've got just a few things to say. As questions. You're talking of webinars. What's the impact of webinars on tourism at the present moment? Do you have webinars from local or even abroad or even from the continent? There is a buzzword of Airbnb. To what extent is the B&B assisting in absorbing tourists to use their spaces? And as the bill, as the Act is going to be amended, what are you looking at around regulation of those places? Because most people seem to be choosing to go to them. And maybe also if you can just give us a little bit of input around regulations around grading. What would you see as far as grading is concerned in the regulations? To follow up on what Honorable Kronborg has said, your planning. You overplan or underplan, but most of the time, not you only, departments tend to overplan. Maybe we do relook at saying last year or last quarter, this is what we planned. This is what we got. Then try not to overplan, because you'll always not reach your target. There's always a jazz festival in Cape Town. What is its impact, budget-wise, or dollar-wise, or pound-wise, or whatever, to the economy of the country? Because tourism is very much involved. There is, annually, there is usually a local government tourism in Durban. The issue of cleanliness of the cities falls squarely on those people. And yet, I think all our cities are really not as clean as they used to be. Worse with Johannesburg. But even other cities are not as clean, because Cape Town itself used to be very, very clean. But it has lost that flavor. But at the same time, Cape Town has got people who in the evening come and clean the city. Is it possible that you have more talks with COCTA around that issue? Because it is responsible for keeping the cities clean, one way or other, municipalities, so that our cities also become very, very attractive, because at times you don't want to go to places that are not really attractive. They're scared of so many things, even things that are not there. So maybe you need to look into that option, working together, of course, with NDT. It will help to work together, and it will give you a better ability to be able to promote those cities, those villages, those townships, because they're clean. And you can actually vouch that clean. Maybe for now, we'd ask you to respond. But before you respond, would you have anything that the committee missed or that is in your mind?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, honourable members, for the questions. I'll start with the ones that are start through and then hand over to Daryl on the grading ones. Honourable Member Cranbrook on Australia. So one of the numbers I'm always looking at is the arrival numbers. But more deeper than that, I look at what we call the cost of acquisition per tourist. Right? So it differs from market to market because the circumstances are different from each other. But I use them as benchmarks. So when the cost of acquisition from a particular market goes up relative to the last couple of years, I ask myself the question is, are we getting the best bang for buck from that market? Then I dig deep and say, well, why is the cost going up? Because we're spending more, but we're getting less yield coming from that side. We've got PR firms in an office over there, and one of the insights they give us that says a lot of our effort, physical investment we make in those markets, is negated by word of mouth. Now, word of mouth is very powerful. It's more powerful than any poster that you can put up. So doing nothing was not an option, right? Because it just simply negated. I mean, you could literally put in 100 rand in, and from the bat, 60% of that is just wiped off because your very same people that are based there, you know, start to speak negatively around it. We created an approach together with our PR firm in Australia to how we're going to overcome this. Whilst we fully understand, yes, you know, people left for the reasons that they left, right? And they will need to justify the existence of those markets based on that. Secondly as well is that, you know, the narrative coming out of South Africa, you know, is just simply going the wrong way. And that's not unique to Australia, that's happening across the world. What do we do about it? And this is more about saying, help us to build South Africa so that, as an example, and it's an emotional link, and the marketers will give you a better view of it, that actually says, although you may have left, but you still have a Dani or someone who's back at home. By promoting tourism, by becoming a tourism ambassador, you actually start to help the economy basically around it. And Come Home Brew is about saying, actually, we are actually encouraging you to travel to South Africa with a local Australian so that you can start to promote the country. Now, is it definitive? Do we know exactly what return we're going to have? At the moment, we've got indications that we put in place. We are going to see in terms of now, did we reach the level of return that we're going to have? Again, this is one of those things where you're prodding. UK as well is also a similar market where we've got another problem. And we're using this as almost like a case study to see, well, what did we do? How do you impact it? How do you affect it to make sure you get some of the returns back? So we're getting a lot of support on the ground from expert firms in Australia who will help us to see how we can get around this thing. As I said, I also look forward to it. But the one thing I can't watch, I can't keep on watching that line deteriorating more and more and more and not doing anything around it. The second one around mice, you are perfectly right, sir. And I'll probably link in a couple of other questions as well. Part of the program and part of the support that we give to the provinces or the different areas around, example, mice, is the bidding strategy itself. It includes a couple of things. It includes things like number of beds within the region where the convention center or the meeting will be. It also includes things like aesthetics, it includes safety, it includes all those things in there. So we highlight to them that the rules of engagement, if you want to be taken seriously as a destination for mice, we need to have these hygienic issues sorted out in place. Now, ours is to inform, it is to educate, it is to push. It is to compel. What we do is we use our support as leverage. That says we will promote those that are easier and more compliant to the visitor experience than others that are not, because we have to guard the tourism brand of South Africa all the time. So we make them aware. As part of the roadshows that we did with the provinces, an example, one of the things that came out all the time was that cleanliness was definitely one of them. Water was one of them. Electricity was also one of them. I mean, in the Free State, the most ironical thing is that there's a resort at the Gariep Dam. They don't have water, as an example. They're in the middle of the dam, but they don't have water. because the pipes have been corroded, etc., etc. So it's as we go around, we are very clear on the demand side, our source markets, but we also have to be very aware of the supply side. If we have nothing to market, we're going to have a problem. If the thing that we're marketing is not of quality standard, because remember, the global tourist has an option. Even the domestic tourist has an option. So we have to make sure that we start to match those two together. So whilst we are not necessarily shying away from it and say we've got nothing to do with it, but we're saying, help us to help you. As an example, what we are doing is with the province is to say, let us do the marketing for you. So if you are having the jazz conference, for example, let us do the marketing for the jazz. The amount of money that you'd used on the marketing side, invested in infrastructure and resources, so rather clean up the space with it, and you're going to get that kind of collaboration coming through. Can we force? No. Can you compel? Yes. And I think that's the case that we are constantly making on that side. International arrivals, currency fluctuations, at the moment we actually don't. We monitor the net effect, but I hear what you're saying. So how do we get the front end of it? And that's the new way of us trying to get this granular information. Then you can slice and dice it in many ways that we can look at. So I think it's something to really think about. The one thing I can tell you, though, that there has been an observation, just mine as well, there is so much what I call tourism leakage happening all over the show. And, I think about 2 weeks ago, went to the Mandela capture site. I couldn't get a cup of coffee there. Couldn't get a T-shirt that says I'm at Mandela. Couldn't get a cap. Okay? but you get what I'm saying. Similarly, even here in Robben Island, I'm saying, look at that ferry. You've got a captured audience sitting there for 45 minutes. After showing them the safety video, you show them nothing, and they sit there. It's a marketing opportunity. It's an opportunity to be pumping stuff at them. You know, go to any resort around the world, the exit is always through the shop. It's never straight to the boat as well. So it is this tourism revenue leakage that I speak of and identify all the time. Go to God's window. You get there. There's no one taking photographs. So you've got to take your own selfie, as an example. There is no T-shirt. And I keep on saying the T-shirt because I'm very aware now of people's caps. I'm like, why are you wearing NY? Why are you wearing that? But where do I get one? Where do I get one that says God's window, as an example? Does SA Tourism deliver it? No, it's not. But at the same time, we've got to highlight it and saying, you know, people need to buy certain things, you know, and then that's the tourism leakage. I fundamentally believe we can do a lot more in terms of making sure we've got that coming through on that side. Now, on domestic stuff, do we go two-tier pricing or not, as an example? And if I can, probably the modern-day version of two-tier pricing is dynamic pricing, which is basically stages based on supply and demand, as an example. The issue that we have is that business in itself are profit maximizers, right? They will charge the highest possible amount at that given point in time, right? And remember, SA Tourism does not run any businesses. We don't own any of them. Essentially, most of them are privately held, or some of them, the likes of the Sand Parks, are state-owned, etc. Here's what they do, is that one of the reasons why the costs are high for domestic travelers is that for that same space, for that same bed, for that same product, for that same seat to Robben Island, you're competing a local with rands, with the foreigners got dollars and euros, essentially for it. That's essentially what happened. It's a competition for the space. What is not happening is that we need to see more products that are diversified and start to cater for different markets. That is basically not happening as quickly as enough. But at the same time, we are seeing the small businesses falling off. What we need to do is, how do we encourage South Africans to actually support those small businesses in order for them to be part of the ecosystem? The problem with those businesses, they're not part of the ecosystem. We are essentially trying to bring them in from that regard. So we are literally looking at different ways. Do we have surge pricing so that, you know, don't travel to Cape Town during December, as an example. Because international market comes here, the prices go up because relatively cheaper for them. But come off-season, that becomes cheaper for everyone. So the patterns of travel, you know, need to find ways of flattening them out. And a price lever can be one of them. but it's often informing and educating the private sector market. At times, they price themselves out of the market. Even now, you start to hear the tourists saying, it was $30 equivalent, now it's $50. We know that is value for money, but I'm paying an extra $20, I'm getting nothing new, and there's a problem over there. So, you know, we've got to look at ways, and I believe when I speak to my counterparts at Cape Town Tourism, they're doing a similar thing around Table Mountain, where it's actually dynamic pricing, set pricing. You go off-peak, you pay 100, off-peak it's 20 as an example. And I think maybe that's something we could look at. But at the moment, it's the same. We are having conversation and constant interaction with the likes of the business in that regard. Honorable Clago, VFR, how do we measure it? Surveys. We have constant surveys that we run all the time together with Status A. Status A does a very comprehensive one. However, theirs is delayed and is more annual. Ours is more regularly. The issue that I have with it, though, is that we can do it differently, and that's what we're pushing towards, using a lot of data points more to give us a bit more overall figures. We're speaking to the likes of banks, as an example, to get a sense of their big data, starting to use electronic as opposed to the manual. Where at the moment, our survey is still done, you know, standing at the airport making people fill out forms, as an example. We want to go electronic, and we are working on a project to essentially do that. That again, at a click of a button, we can just add another field, you know, in terms of the questions that are asked, that gives us a bit more granular information. There's always pushbacks you always get from provinces, as an example, because they would tend to look at their performance differently from what we publish them. And again, through that forum that we've set up, where we meet with the provinces on a quarterly basis, these are the things that are actually start to be ironed out from that regard. I do tourism province by province. The roadshow essentially did that, where we went through each province. And the thing with the provinces, we have decided to go through the provincial tourism authorities. And I remember at this very forum the last time I got asked, what about municipalities? Don't you get involved in municipalities? There are so many municipalities around. We said, let's cut this cake one layer at a time. Let's start with the provincial tourism authorities. Let's get them to make a compelling case. And as we go through on that side. Internships, you are very right on the internship one. What we've decided to do is we are holding back on internships until we embed the entire program, then we're going to bring them significantly in. When we look at our requirements in terms of capacity, we need more than 202, but we know that there's no appetite in this current environment to increase the public sector labor force, and we don't want it all to be contributing towards that. But we want to use internships as a part in the process, basically, to start to plug in. Two reasons. One, we also want to use internships for the industry as well, so that the hoteliers can come poach people from SA Tourism. It's actually a good thing when they do poach people. I get when people's phones don't ring from the private sector when they're looking for people, we're not doing something right. I think that's the key indicator across the board. Their phone should ring. If it doesn't, I have a problem with what it's not doing. So we want to grow, especially amongst the youth, expose them to certain environments. And you can imagine what it can do for a young person to work on the New York office for 3 months. Mm-hmm. We send them over there. It literally will spark them, basically. And I think that's the space. SA Tourism has been having interns, but we haven't had an intern program. So people come in. After 2 years, they exit, but we're not sure what we took them through. So I said to guys, let's have a program. So we know when you step into SA Tourism, 3 months there, 6 months there, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time you exit, you've got an overall view on that side. Chair, webinars. Webinars are very popular, Chair. It's something we started 10 months, 11 months ago. I missed one last month, and the backlash I got was, don't slip back now into silence. We want to engage. And the way we've positioned it is to say it's not an us and them thing. So, you know, these type of conversations can easily slip into government, it's useless again, it's not delivering, et cetera, et cetera. But how we position this is industry getting together. So help us so that we can grow the sector and make suggestions where there are gaps from that perspective. Yesterday, we had a very successful one on safety and security, where we actually invited Vish Naidu, who from the SAPF was there, the private sector, the Tourism Safety Initiative was there as well, and it's amazing the suggestions that came in terms of how we can have, and we're talking practical things. So one of the questions was, as an example, if I'm a tour agent and I've got a bus and there is a police car that's stopping me, but I'm suspecting that it's a bogus one, do I have permission to drive to an area that, you know, is a bit more transparent, et cetera, that I feel safe on? You know, it's those type of practical things that we kind of conversation and discuss in that regard. So it's something definitely we want to grow. But more importantly as well is that we are not only talking to South African tour operators, we're speaking to the people globally who sell South Africa, right? Whether you are in Germany, whether in Brazil, whether in Beijing, as you sell South Africa, you've got questions that you may have in order to clarify that you can start to push through on that side. Local tourism authorities, most definitely. Again, through the provincial tourism authorities as well, we want them to champion these so that there's an enabling environment for these to happen. Jazz, what is the impact of that? Jazz, as an example, in some of the events, in terms of rents and cents and impact, we constantly get those reports in terms of giving you, in terms of, and we want to use them as well, you know, as case study for other provinces, the impact of events that have on the tourism space, and make sure that we can drive some of that activity. We are really pushing the province. I want to say that the only reason to get someone to travel to a place like the R, you have to give them a reason to travel to the R. And it can be an event, it can be an activity, anything from that perspective. But everyone has got an opportunity from that side. I'm going to hand over to Daryl to round off on the creating quality assurance related questions. And yeah.
Perfect. Thank you, CEO. Thank you for the questions, honorable members. The first question relating to the support from big business, I think it's important, again, to mention that globally, the hospitality industry uses the star grading system to categorize different classes of product. South Africa is no different. We're very fortunate that the big players in the industry, whether they be Tsoho Sun, whether it be Protea Hotels by Marriott, the City Lodge Group, Legacy, to mention but a few, are committed to using the star grading levels as differentiators and positioning tools and marketing tools for their different product portfolios. In terms of other systems, there are obviously other systems available globally. The biggest, I would say, opponent, if you want to call that, to a star grading system and a quality assurance system globally is the advent of the online guest reviews. But having researched and following the trends globally quite closely, it most certainly benefits any destination and product for that matter too, to target the quality assurance angle with a very hybrid approach. So to use an independent body like the Grading Council to do an independent assessment according to international standards and issue stars as an indicator of their levels of standards and quality, but also to use online guest reviews on an ongoing basis for the period of a year or longer, depending how long the star rating is valid for, to continuously monitor how they are being perceived and their reputation is being managed online. So we advocate for both, and we have systems, the Tourism Analytics Portal, which helps us to monitor online guest reviews in South Africa as well. So from a risk perspective, I think it's relatively low risk from a big business perspective. Your second question regarding which businesses we target. So we target all the categories, whether they are self-catering, country houses, bed and breakfasts, guest houses, caravan and camping sites, hostels, backpackers, we target all of them. We're quite fortunate that we have the majority of the hotels in South Africa already graded. We have in the region of 700 hotels. So we use the Tourism Incentive Program to as a lead generation tool. And by virtue of the fact that the majority of the hotels are already graded, our target audience is the small to medium enterprises. In terms of our current database, I would say 85% of our database are small to medium enterprises, but that's also the area where we're going to receive the most growth in terms of numbers. So that's by far a definite focus area for us. The second question, or third question rather, in terms of the length of time to apply, In order to apply to be graded, it's all an online process. If you have all of your documentary evidence available, I reckon it wouldn't take you longer than 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes to get a fully completed application to us. In order to turn that application around to actually get the assessor there can happen in literally a week, depending on how quickly the invoice is paid that is generated for that client. The application, which includes the Tourism Incentive Program's grading support program, is a little bit more lengthy. And the reason it is a bit more lengthy is the National Department of Tourism requires a number of documents from us, information documents from the property in order to apply the funding. As I mentioned earlier, things like a tax clearance certificate, your BEE status or your BEE report, otherwise an affidavit. There's things like a public liability insurance, your business registration documentations, and so on. And often what happens is a property owner doesn't necessarily have all that information at the point of application, so they are able to come back at a later stage and include that information and obviously submit the application. So it will take a little bit longer to do one of those, but typically it shouldn't take you longer than 10, 15 minutes to get an application to us. Then the question regarding penalties for illegal usage of stars. The Tourism Act is pretty clear. The Tourism Act outlines that if you are found to be using stars illegally, you are liable for either a fine or imprisonment. We have a database and we track the reports of illegal usage of stars very closely. We have in the past put together bundles of evidence which we have referred to the South African Police Services for prosecution, and unfortunately in every instance they have returned it to us nolly prosecute because they simply don't have the manpower to process those kind of things. So we do struggle with enforcement of illegal usage of stars because we don't have the powers ourselves to actually go and enforce. And it's one thing, Madam Chair, you also mentioned things like regulation. I think when we revisit the regulations and the legislation that govern the work that we do, enforcement is going to have to take a much a bigger play or bigger role to ensure that we completely eliminate the illegal usage of stars going forward. Then on to regulation. We're obviously regulated by the Tourism Act. There's a whole chapter for us on the Tourism Grading Council. But also having had discussions with the CEO and other members of our executive team and the awards committee, it's becoming more and more apparent that we need to do an international benchmarking exercise where we travel to bodies such as ourselves globally and go and understand from them how they both generate revenue to avoid placing undue stress on the already stressed fiscus, but also how they go about ensuring that their quality assurance mandate is done impeccably. So we are in discussions about this particular trip and how we are going to select who we go and benchmark with. And then perhaps just to touch on the Airbnb question. At present, the Grading Council is only able to grade properties that are legally registered. And I know in many cases the properties that are used on the Airbnb platform are actually residential homes. I know, too, that I participated in a national department sharing economy think tank, and I did the same here with the Wesco team last week, I think it was. And there's a lot of work happening at the moment about how do we go about regulating and trying to formalize this sharing economy space so that the current incumbents and the current players in the industry are not in any way sort of sidelined or negatively affected by the surges and upsurges of the sharing economy. So there's a number of inputs that we've given to how best to potentially regulate, monitor, manage the sharing economy. I noticed a couple of statistics recently that Airbnb, a quarter, in fact 20% of all of the registered hosts for Airbnb are actually for Africa in Cape Town. So it just goes to show that it's a huge trend in South Africa, people to make their homes available for accommodation purposes, and obviously we as an entity need to track it very carefully to make sure that the people who are utilizing these properties and coming specifically for tourism reasons to South Africa get a good experience. So we are working very closely with it and watching it very closely.
Thank you, Dara. I think from a policy side, we are engaging with the department to give them guidelines around it. I think instinctively from a tourism side, the more capacity in the market, the better for us. But it is in these details, I think, that Daryl highlights around the legality, make sure there's also a level playing field, again, you know, with the existing players in the spaces. And things like labor laws and everything else get observed, taxes and everything else, basically. And so we are giving our inputs into the department in that regard. I think we've covered everything, Chair, and thank you very much.
Yeah, you've covered everything, but I think one of the issues you mentioned whetted my mind to ask you around the interns. Maybe if you can have a conversation or engage businesses and countries to make use of these interns and even encourage an exchange program of interns so that it becomes a really valuable exercise for tourism and for individuals. Secondly, there seems to be a lot of paperwork. Is there a way that your app as tourism could be improved so that when people come, they just go to whatever and they know where the place they're looking for is at? And then my final question, no, it's not a question, it's a comment. Do you brand the Hiltons, or they're branded by the name Hilton? Or Haiti and so forth, do you think it's important to have them graded or by virtue of the name they've branded themselves, or they're a first-class brand?
Thank you, Chair. Most definitely on the interns one. You see, it's the quality of our program that's going to make our interns desirable in the market. I think that's what we're concentrating on. So it's definitely something that we want to contribute, as I say, tourism, you know, to the skills and depth of, you know, especially young people in this space. So it's on there. Technology around apps, it's front and center. We actually have one in the pipeline. It is just sitting at the ministry for a couple of iterations. And again, it's going to bring a lot of these things that we speak of today into the technology space so that it's able to, it's almost like a bespoke travel agent in your pocket, but at the same time gives us lots of insights, which will help us basically in terms of the amount of money we spend on research, et cetera, into that environment. So we are really working with the department. Maybe you could, the next time we have them here, give them a word for me that says, can you please expedite this one, because we really are interested users of it. And then on the, yeah, you know, which one's more available, the stars or the brand, I'll leave the hotel here to answer that one.
Thank you, Chair. So many of these big brands spend an enormous amount of money positioning themselves globally from a quality perspective, and you mentioned Hilton, which is a very good example of it. Hilton is positioned globally and is recognized as one of the premier brands across the globe. And in South Africa, in many instances, they rely on that for any inbound tourists and inbound guests. But from a South African perspective, in order for them to access the South African tourism platforms, in order for them to access government spend, those kind of things, they need to be graded. In order for them to host government conferences, you know, participate at the likes of Indaba, those kind of things, they're also required to be graded. So it's a bit of a mix of the two. There's many, many international brands who do a positioning job in terms of quality particularly well. As you mentioned, the Hilton's a good example. There's the Hyatt and many, many others. But in South Africa, even though they have been particularly well positioned globally and in South Africa from a brand consistency perspective, the grading gives them a completely different opportunity to activate different channels and different platforms that will enable them to grow their market share and to encourage more people to stay with them. So it's a great hybrid model as well.
Hello, Nomzam. Do you have anything to contribute?
Chair, may I please apologize as well? Thank you. Well, I noted the committee's comments around the improvements in the reporting and the disclosure of the information, something that we have been looking at SA Tourism on, and we are happy that it's responsive to what you have wanted. Maybe I could say that the other thing that Minister is quite interested in now is to make sure that more and more the work of SAT aligns itself to the imperatives that government is driving right now on radical economic transformation and supporting small businesses. And as you can see over the years, the kind of targeting that SAT gives you has that level of detail. And we hope that we'll see more and more of that, even in their implementation, with support to youth, for instance, with this internship program they are developing. So that's kind of what we are interested in, just strengthening alignment on now. And obviously the department continues to advise Minister on the oversight issues related to SAT work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Nomzamo. But if you can just ask from the Minister, what is the progress around the development of Amadeus in the province, in the department, so that all these touch and go are able to be done. Thank you very much for the presentation, and also we congratulate you on getting your 16th or 15th unqualified audit, 15th or 16th, and we're also very excited on the 25th, because tourism was mentioned. I heard it three times, but Petra said four times. So tourism is really becoming a gold of the country, because even the people in agriculture are getting a lot of tourists. Maybe you must begin to look at agricultural tourism as well, so that we make use of that field to promote tourism. Because for agriculture to happen, there are also tourists that visit those places, in particular the wine route. And maybe at a certain point in time, there could also be a wine route to improve wine tourism. Because when tourists come here, they want to taste all the wines along the route. So maybe also look at the option of wine tourism. How best can you promote this? Or maybe through your webinar, or through engaging the wineries or wine people, this might become a reality at a certain point in time. But thank you very much for the input. Thank you very much, honorable members, for your probing and inquisitive questions. And thanks for responding to all the questions. We're looking forward to the Act coming in for amendment, or to the bills to amend the Act. Might not come in our time, but we'll be watching it wherever we are. Honorable Kronborg, I must thank you in particular for being the stalwart in this committee, because you are able to follow things that some of us were not aware of, or maybe things that some of us did not know more about. But because you've been here for quite some time, you are really a stalwart. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
And we're expecting Sandra to come and give us some input when? Next week. So we're expecting Sandra to give input. And maybe also as ambassadors, I think we're all ambassadors of tourism, we can begin to talk to the various areas or places of attraction. If they do have a cap or a cup or whatever, so that people can take as mementos when they leave this country. Because that's what other countries are doing, to sell their products as well. Thank you very much. It was short and sweet, and all the questions and queries have been addressed. Thank you very much. Sure. Honorable members, we've been invited for the Ninizela Awards on Sunday, and of course to the Tourism Summit. COSI is busy with the arrangements for people that are going there. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
When my old friend, he must remember that comment, please. Put it in your PNG notes. Put it there, and I'll take a copy of
the... She's commending Mr. Krautbrocker on being a stalwart.
The stalwart.
The stalwart.
The stalwart. No,
it's
picking your notes,
because
he's going to use your notes to do James and my evaluation.
Jesus.
It's fair. I mean, I'm not asking you to
tell me that happened. Do they actually read our website?
Yeah, I would say they take our performance very carefully, and we monitor on all the other things we do. The PNG things. They look at that to make sure that we make
a contribution. Okay. All right, cool.